Drums of Freedom.
Injection, fellas.
Blasted out of my sleep, 6 o'clock in the morning. Some maniac outside leaning on his car horn. Gotta go outside and teach him the proper etiquette. Neighborhood bad enough, can't let it get worse than it already is. You hear me? Do y'all hear me? I need my sleep. That's the only time on this planet that I ever get any peace. I tried that college thing on some American dream tip, but yet I still live on the same street that I grew up on. Them same streets that I grew tough on. My mother hoped that I would surpass at least to the middle class, but yet I'm still stuck on that same mentality. And all them years of college ain't even challenged me. But when I graduated, life was right there to put a degree in my hands and a foot on my chest. And here I am dressed in my pajamas and no slippers, about to run outside and rip the backbone out this fool. Ain't got nothing to show for all them years of school, but... bad credit. And even worse decisions. And I live in a neighborhood where people buy food on credit, so they finance what they don't just take, and they're making payments on food that they already ate. And when they see me on the street, they're looking at me like they're about to break, and I'm snatching open this door like I'm about to break, and I see my best friend. And he's sitting in the minivan with four of those child car seats, and he's looking at me with the gun in his hand. It's like I can hear his heartbeat. And with his other hand, he takes a swig of liquor from a bottle of scotch, pops the door locks like, get in, again. Moves the pictures of his children off the car seat with the gun, throws them in the glove box, then it's like everything stopped. And we drive, and we drive, and we drive, till we get to the part of town where it seems like the American dream is still alive. And in my mind, I'm playing Nina Simone as I'm looking out the window on the passenger side. And it's like somebody scraping their fingernails along my bones as I feel this grown man cry. And I wonder if he knows that tens of millions of people in this country are depressed but using alcohol or drugs to remain in denial. I wonder if he knows that there's a suicidal tendency hiding behind almost every smile, because no matter how many times they go back to school or how many jobs they work simultaneously, they could never seem to permanently change their lifestyle. But somehow, they convince themselves that it would be different for their children. And eventually, they'll realize that's a fantasy, but they need something to believe in until then. And him, he just wants to be a father to his children. But sometimes, y'all, after all the love is gone, children become pawns in a relationship. Relationship with his children is the vehicle that his ex-wife chooses to take out her frustrations with. And if he's just one day late on the child support, she reports it to the courts. And what's driving him crazy is yesterday, he just got laid off. Now, 30 days ago, her and the kids just moved in with a new man who drives a Range Rover and plays golf. And that's a year ago from the day that my best friend had to go to jail for making her last boyfriend stop telling the children that their father was soft. And right now, he feels like everything's lost. That's why I'm glad he came to me to give me this opportunity to put a few thoughts across. And you see, all day and all night, we talk. And I tell him, a man is judged by what's in his soul and what's in his heart, and not just by what's in his pockets. I tell him, me and him are friends through thick and thin, and if he's in pain, we need to put our brains, time, and money together to stop it. I tell him, if the fact that we don't have a lot of money is a problem, then rather than getting fed up, what we need to do is wake up. And like Moses and Jacob, whenever we get together, just find new ways to profit. Because in my eyes, our friendship is how we live and how we die. And don't you ever believe, even for a second, that I would ever let you slide. Now, for what I'm about to say, I want you to listen with all your pride and sexuality aside, because as God is my guide, like my own self, I love you.
Feeling a bit dozy this afternoon. I just took a fluoride shower. How about you, Will? Oh, no, that's right. You got rainwater, you lucky devil. It's so terrible, you know. Every time I wash my hands, I think, oh, gosh, it's the fluoride again. It soaks into your skin. It gets into the pores. It poisons you to no end. You know, it's not possible to not get poisoned. It's just so frustrating. Every time you go out and you try and eat, have something to eat, there's more poison. And then you go out, you know, to get something to buy so that you can make yourself, you know, not out of a packet. And what you have to buy comes out of more packets than the packet stuff that you tried to avoid in the first place. And you get four types of packet residue. It's insane. There's no choice. Oh, dear Lord, it hurts me so much in my brain places. I can guarantee you, I'm not the only one who gets driven mad by the fact that you can't not get poisoned. Even right now, at this very moment, as I speak into a microphone, I am being poisoned by EMF radiation or something. But isn't it freaking hilarious? And no matter what the heck you do, you get poisoned. And so everybody gets apathetic and says, hey, well, something's going to kill you anyway. As if doing it a little bit earlier ain't that bad, you know? Who cares if you don't get to see your grandchildren? It'll be all right. I'm sure they'll exist. Or maybe they won't. Maybe the children that you get born will die quicker anyway. And they won't get to see their grandchildren either. Who knows? Let's just have some fabulous, apathetic society that doesn't really give two flying Fs about anything sacred. Watches copious amounts of pornography. drinks up as much fluoridated water and fabulous fizzy soda pop drinks. Washed down with copious quantities of McDonald's. This is not a healthy society. This is a sick, brainwashed, zombified, obesity, diabetes-ridden, mental disorder, suffering society. In other words, simple phrase, effed in a single letter. We all know what the F word means, and that's what each and every single one of us is at this particular moment. Because everything's so effed up that we could not be more effed than we currently are now. But wait, actually we could be. If we do F all about it. But conveniently, there are people like myself and copious amounts of other people, a plethora, if you will, a veritable mercenary army on tap, like yourselves.
Due to some violent content, parental discretion is advised.
A collision between a train and a bus left at least 5 people dead and over 50 others injured Thursday morning in northwest China's Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region. The death toll could be higher as some of the injured are in severe condition.
A spokesman with the city's railway bureau said a runaway bus careered onto a railway track and was hit by a running train at 9:07 a.m. in the capital city Urumqi. Passengers on the bus were mostly students on their way to school. Police said at least 5 people were killed in the accident. The wounded were rushed to 3 local hospitals.
It would be the engineer who wanted a bite to eat. He left the monkey sitting on the driver's seat. The monkey pulled the throttle, locomotive jumped the gun and did 90 miles an hour down the mainline run. The big locomotive is right on time. The big locomotive coming down the line. Locomotive number 99 left the engineer with a worried mind.
The driver of a children's train ride that went off the track Saturday, killing a six-year-old boy, admitted to police that he was driving the amusement ride too fast. That's according to documents that were released Tuesday, one day after a state agency fired one of its inspectors for falsifying a recent inspection report on the train. The Associated Press has also obtained 911 calls made by frantic witnesses just moments after the train went off its tracks and toppled off a bridge.
There's at least a dozen or more small children that have been crashed. I don't know how many have broken limbs or bones, but a lot of them are bleeding. They look severely injured.
One kid's legs are tore off. One kid's not breathing.
You think one
kid? There's a Hobart.
Okay, is somebody trying to do CPR with the one that's not breathing?
Yeah, they're trying to do CPR. He's not breathing. There's people with their heads all vested. It's bad. Hurry. You gotta
hurry.
Okay,
we're getting people out there.
6-year-old Benji Easler died in the crash, and authorities say 27 other people, many of them children, were also injured. The train's driver, 42-year-old Matt Conrad, was also injured in the crash. He's a railroad history buff who was hired to drive the train just last year. His mother has described him as a kind parent who would never intentionally harm anyone and who tried to help his passengers after the crash.
The engineer got the dispatcher on the phone. He told him all about his locomotive was gone. He said, get on the wire switch operator to ride, 'cause the monkey's got the main line sewn up tight. The switch operator got the message in time. Said there's a northbound limit on the same main line. But open up the gate, we gotta let him through the hole, 'cause the monkey's got the locomotive under control. The big locomotive is right on time. The big locomotive coming down the line. The big locomotive number 99 left the engineer with a worried mind.
A young woman was killed after a vehicle and a train collided. Christina Medina is live at the scene with more tonight. Christina.
Yes, good evening. We just finished speaking to police. They are not releasing her name at this point, and again, only describing her as a young woman, but they say she died after her car was hit by a train. We do have some video that we want to show you now. We're here in Southern Lee Summit. Police telling us that the train was heading south on Hamblin Road. Police say it happened right after 6 o'clock this evening. We're told the driver was the only person in that red vehicle. Now, as we mentioned, we did speak to police just moments ago, and here's where they are right now in their investigation. Take a listen.
Currently, our investigation will focus on the status of those crossing arms at the time of the crash, as well as whether or not alcohol was a factor in the crash. We've been assisted tonight by the Union Pacific Railroad Police. They've come out and assisted us with the investigation.
So they are talking to people as we speak, trying to figure out if those crossing arms were working. They will continue their investigation. We should learn much more tomorrow.
Why, the big locomotive is right on time. The big locomotive coming down the line. The big locomotive number 99 left the engineer with a worried mind. I've had a big locomotive is right on time. Big locomotive coming down the line. The big locomotive number 99 left the engineer with a worried mind. Locomotive coming down the line. The big locomotive number 99 left the engineer with a worried mind.
What's the better solution here?
The better solution was, as Mr. Paul said, never go at all. This was none of our business. But I think what we're seeing is the string is playing out. We threatened Gaddafi and that didn't work. There's an arms embargo and an economic embargo. That didn't work. There was a UN resolution and that didn't work. aerial bombing has continued and has impact, but it hasn't defeated him. Now we're at the stage where we're going to try to apparently try to train and arm the resistance. That takes a long time. I don't know if we have that time against Gaddafi. What we're seeing is the president being putting himself into a corner where his only option is ground troops.
But that's something that is not, that's something that no one says that they want to do in this administration. I mean, they simply don't want to do that. They want
Well, the choice may come down to admitting that it was a mistake and being defeated in the sense that Gaddafi survives, or putting ground troops in. Nations are a lot like people. They don't like making admitting to mistakes. And maybe they don't want to put them in, but when it comes down to looking defeat in the face, I wonder.
You know, you led the CIA's unit that tracked Osama bin Laden 1996 to 1999, and you believe that much like that situation, America's involvement in Libya could prove to be a recruiting tool for extremists. Why?
Oh, it's absolutely a recruiting tool. It's the American-led West attacking a Muslim country that has
They've
oil.
They've been very careful to say it's not the American-led West, that NATO has now fully taken over the operations. Firepower was used in the beginning, but that this is a coalition that includes Arab states.
That may fool some Americans. It's not going to fool the people who sympathize with bin Laden and other Islamists. This is really a U.S.-led operation. And you talk about the Arab states that are involved. The Arab states are tyrannies that are hated by their own people. This is a piece of theater set up by Mrs. Clinton and Mr. McCain and the bipartisan group that loves to intervene abroad. In the Muslim world, this is Americans killing Muslims again, and it looks like it's for oil.
I just want to ask, are you trying to have it both ways and saying that, okay, these are tyrannies that hate their own people? Well, that's why we're helping, because in Libya, it was the people that wanted Gaddafi out, that they were tired of it. So weren't we then supporting Islamic democracy, I guess you could say, in these countries where they're tired of totalitarian rule?
If we were supporting Islamic democracy, that would be one thing. But if you listen to Mrs. Clinton, and especially the rather crazed Ms. Rice at the UN, this is all about democracy in a world where democracy is not going to take hold.
I think it's very clear, Michael Scheuer, that you are no fan of this policy and this administration. I think calling Ambassador Rice crazed is certainly a significant charge.
Well, I don't know. I've just listened to her. You know, that's only my impression. And I have to say, this is not a Democratic problem. This is a Republican problem, too. Both parties love to intervene in other people's business where there are no U.S. interests at stake and where we spend enormous amounts of money at a time when we're nearly bankrupt. That doesn't seem to me to be a wise practice of American statesmanship.
And that's a whole other story. To call the United States bankrupt, the United States is running humongous deficits, yes, but the economy and this mission in Libya are two separate issues.
They're not separate issues, ma'am. You're just carrying the water for Mr. Obama.
I'm certainly not carrying anyone's water, and I will assure you of that.
At least 10 rebel fighters in eastern Libya are reported to have been killed by a coalition airstrike which hit their convoy. The attack happened during a chaotic battle with Colonel Gaddafi's forces on Friday night in the no-man's land between the towns of Ajdabiya and Brega. One of the vehicles attacked was an ambulance. The rebels have a dangerous habit of firing into the air in celebration, so it's thought the coalition aircrew might have mistaken that for hostile fire. Meanwhile, the Gaddafi government has rejected the conditions of the rebels' offer of a ceasefire. So the fighters line up again in convoy as they prepare to continue their struggle against the regime.
I want to welcome me to your country. It's far too crowded for me to be here, but I don't want to be there. But I just got there, but I don't want to ask to be rerouted on the first day of this month's Armageddon. Writing speeches with unleavened pencil. Rewrite the scrolls of history. In the dark with a flash, I'm whispering to myself and the other diplomats from Switzerland. Me and my constituents and Dan Rather, we like to gather and run the world with the help of motherboard and a back scratcher, God's computer. I drink a vodka shooter out of an antique auction luger with a bunch of cranky cop recruiters. I offer the future in an office with the t-shirt that buttons up.
Jim, I understand you've got some new information here on the aftermath in Benghazi to report.
I do. First, though, I'd like to just mention that something significant as well happening in another flashpoint. You know, we've been talking about how quiet it has been in all these key areas like Benghazi, like Misrata and other places. Well, we understand now that there is fighting in the center of Misrata. That's a large town, Libya's third largest, about 100 miles to the east of us here in Tripoli. There are reports. Sources are saying that it's pro-Qaddafi forces that have actually entered the center again. You know, it's a town that they encircled about 2 weeks ago and have been pounding mostly with artillery shells. But that had eased off over a few days. Now that is happening again.
Just because the world runs on oil doesn't mean oil men should run the world. Just because the sky's my paved road doesn't mean you should pave a road over the sky. My mom is an enthusiastic movie actress who's into pop culture, ethnic cleansing, genetic blending of musketeers who smile from ear to ear for thousands of years, step and veggies make the crowd cheer. Now, human shields, free promoters will sleep over and dry your hair with a leaf blower. If you don't know the secret code word, then don't reorder our albums that contain three leaf clovers that give relief to ulcers. Did you know American and British royal fam will lick your oil pan and eat grade A suicide bomber with a loyal fan? Follow those two, they're looking out for the interests of a small group of Illuminati. Lydia's firstborn male with horns and a tail.
In terms of Benghazi, also important information coming out now, and that is that it looks like the pro-Qaddafi forces have pulled back. It's impossible to say from our perch here, obviously, how far that is. But we understand that there are scenes of devastation left by the French attacks yesterday, which did trigger this pullback. Scenes of burnt out tanks, as many as 14, at least 20 armored personnel carriers, some of them flattened on this road from Benghazi back to Ajdabiya, that town about 80 miles south that we've been talking about so much over the past couple of weeks. Many bodies as well strewn along that highway, impossible to identify many of them. And also, it's a bit eerie to even talk about, there are rebels now coming out, venturing forward out of Benghazi, going back towards Ajdabiya, bringing their families along and celebrating along this route, taking pictures of the devastation. It's a very strange scene, and I'll throw it back to you.
Yeah, no, I can about imagine. Let me ask you about the pushback on the strikes, especially from the Arab League. Jim, what are you hearing about that?
That's right. There has been pushback already, and it's happening because of the number of civilian casualties, which again can't be independently verified, that are now in the 30s or 40s.
Okay, looks like our signal went down there with Jim.
Pumping gasoline, how much do you want? Fill it up and clean the windshield with the rag. You'll need a quart of oil. My name is Clinton Moyle. I'm not from foreign soil. I've used a car antenna as a fencing foil. Sounds like your engine coil will make your grandson's attention boil. Contribute and give me the rest of the money before you go to the Statue of Liberty restroom, honey. I need to go inside of the store to get you some gum, because your breath smells like the Exxon Valdez oil spill. Clinton, free with the use of a NASCAR gas card. It's a page turner where the red fern grows. Fuel for the bedroom stove. Glad your red fern grows.
Rock the boat with your broccoli.
Wouldn't you like to be frozen nude in front of frozen food? Hook, line, and sinker, but a bookbinder thinker might blow a fuse. When the tube sock can't pop up on TV gates, I sing a boombox and bucket and soul list to tapes. Well, just the gates, who's all sir? When I'm full fools from a fat yoke and hunger strike, from a cold with hunger, sign testing biological warfare. Watch the TV screen spectacle, the herbal speaking clean edible, leafy green vegetable, or a couch potato spot. When say no, the drugs and in your throat, pull those, the cold chills go through your arthritic when a corpus. The idea is that you'll get to move into your sandcastle by pressing buttons, brand a candle, with a set of instructions on how to turn a TV drying washer into a flying somewhere. But never don't be a rush to an eye doctor, cause I'm not wrapped so tight, it's act on that. Cut right now. Don't industry smart peddlers, but a wrestler.
But
I want to ask a question dealing with monetary policy, because it used to be that was the key to this hearing. Today it's economic, management, central economic planning, and everything's up for grabs. But monetary policy, of course, it was stated that the job of the Fed is to give us stable prices and full employment. But if you look over the last three or four decades, there's nothing stable about it. And look at unemployment today. If we were honest with ourselves, if we look at all the people who no longer look for work, it's over 20%. And to pretend that it's going down and everything is rosy, I think we're deceiving ourselves to think that is happening. So I would say it's a total failure. And one of the reasons I'd like to suggest and get your comments on is, how can you manage monetary policy, which means to manage the dollar, if we don't have a definition of a dollar? I can't find in the code define what a dollar is, or a Federal Reserve note. And everybody knows a Federal Reserve note is a dollar. You create a note, which is a promise to pay, and that's another dollar. So the more debt you have, the more dollars you have. But if, I'd like to know if you know whether there's a definition of a dollar and when it became known that a dollar was a Federal Reserve note. I want a definition of money. That seems to be the real job. We want a measurement of value. And this is the reason that I believe that we made a big mistake by declaring fiat money, paper money, would be our measurement of value.
Just because the world runs on oil doesn't mean oil men should run the world. Just because the sky's my paved road doesn't mean you should pave a road over the sky.
If you look at what the stock market, if you bought the stock market in the year 2000, the index, it would have taken 44 ounces of gold. In 1980, it would have taken 1.5 ounces of gold. Today, it's back down to 8 ounces. So in true value, the stock market's in a crash. And you say, oh no, gold is not money. And you and I will have a disagreement on whether gold is money or not. But the Fed holds gold, the Treasury holds gold, central banks hold gold, and it, my opinion doesn't matter either, because it's history. It's the marketplace. Gold is the true long-term measurement of value. So how can you run your operation and without a definition of the dollar? And what is your definition of a dollar?
You raise some important points, Congressman. Our mandate is maximum employment and price stability. My definition of the dollar is what it can buy. Consumers don't want to buy gold. They want to buy food and gasoline and clothes and all the other things that are in the consumer basket. And it's the buying power of the dollar in terms of those goods and services that is what is important, and that's what I call price stability. The fact is that after the 1970s, where you're correct, there was a lot of instability and inflation was very high. Since Chairman Volcker in the early 80s, and I know you have talked about your relationship with him, brought inflation down, that inflation in the United States has been low and stable, around 2% for some time. And in fact, it's been 2% over the last 5 years, despite everything else that's been going on.
Shake it like a Polaroid picture. Check this. I is here with none other than my main man, Dr. Schultz. Him was the chief economics advisor to some bloke called President Carter. And also, he was the budget director for Lyndon Johnson. And she was the president.
Nope.
What?
It's a he, and it's Lyndon.
Yo, let me just do the beginning bit again. Yeah. Okay. Yo, check it. I is here with Dr. Schultz. Him was economic advisor to President Carter. And also to President Johnson, who was a man. So, economics, it's well important, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's where you make your money.
For real.
You get rich, you get poor, you're unemployed, you got a job.
Let's talk about the notes. Why does they put pictures of gaylords on the bills here?
Of who?
Of butty men. Of men who... almost.
They don't.
What? No, on the thing, like...
They don't.
Like this bloke here.
Yeah.
Come on, that bloke.
He was a famous general. He was a president.
Him was a gay lord?
No.
But come off it, he's got the same haircut as Minan.
So what? What's a haircut got to do with it? He would say you're looking pretty weird with your hair.
Yo, well,
because
he better tell me that face to face.
To him, to him you would.
Wouldn't it be better, instead of having like a $5 bill and a $10 bill, having like a $5.44 bill and a $16.89 bill and like a $22.11 bill and like a $5.44, no, I've done that already, or like a $182,000, $250 million bill. That way, you wouldn't have to carry any spare change, innit?
So you go to a store, and you've got a $52.64 bill in your pocket, right?
We hope. It's just a dream at the moment.
Suppose you did. And it turns out when you got the thing, the price was not $52.64, but $52.65. What would you do?
Pay for it with the $52.65 bill.
You don't have a...
Bolt. One go. Thank you. Right.
Wouldn't you have to have thousands and thousands of bills in your pocket?
What is the stock market?
I want to have a company that produces toys, right?
What is this? What, because you've had enough politics and economics?
No. I just want to make money. I got a good toy. I know I can sell it.
What is it?
But any toy. I'm just giving you an example. I don't know.
Is it one of them robot dogs?
Yeah, let's say it is. Or something like that. Who knows?
Because them is out already.
All right, say it's a better one.
Why does you want to go into toys? Does you not think the economics is interesting anymore?
No. I'm giving you an example.
All right.
I'm trying to tell you what investment means and why you need stocks.
Oh, you don't want to go into toys.
Well, I don't want to myself, but I'm trying to give you an example.
Suppose I did. It would have been a laugh.
Well, I sure would have, because I wouldn't know how to make them. But let's suppose I did.
All right.
And I got a great idea. I got a friend's got a good toy he designed, and I think it's going to
sell. Wicked, what's that?
Let's suppose. I'm just giving an example. I just made it up.
Oh.
I just made it up.
Does it make a difference what price they buy it at or sell it at?
Yeah. The lower you buy it and the higher you sell it, the more money you make.
But ain't the problem with selling things when you was high is that you sometimes get really bad deals. Like one time... When me was high, me sold me car for like 24 chicken McNuggets. Ain't it wrong to do that?
But I wasn't high.
Yo, but no, me was totally high. Me was mashed. Me'd done like, you know, like some super skunk from Amsterdam that me'd got in, and me'd smoked like loads of it. And then it was like me was well hungry, and me mate Dangerous Dave said, "Yo, can we have your car?" And I said, "Oh, yo, give me the chicken. Maybe we'll chat about
it." That's because you were high.
Yo, for real.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about the stock. Is the price high?
Oh, so you shouldn't be high when you
sell it. No, don't be high. That's a real rule.
Yo.
Don't be high when you're buying and selling stock.
Is this mysterious flying light? Something extraterrestrial? A clandestine military exercise? Or somebody just fooling about with a garden torch? This unexplained footage placed on YouTube is said to be that of a UFO flying over the Italian city of Naples. UFO watchers say there's been similar such sightings in the night sky above Italy of late. It's even been reported that an Italian military chief is taking the idea seriously that aliens might be responsible.
Give her six quavers, then pause.
She sent us four quavers, a group of five quavers, a group of four semi-quavers.
Good
races have in common are 5, 6.
I hope somebody's taking all this down.
What are we saying to each other?
Seems they're trying to teach us a basic tonal vocabulary.
It's the first day of school, fellas.
Space tourism flights from Scotland could be one step closer to blasting off. The UK government has announced plans to look again at legislation which prevents launches. Speaking on the first day of a consultation on the UK Space Agency's plans for the next few years, Science Minister David Willetts, who's seen here on the left, said we've started to rationalise our regulation so as to enable Britain to be an effective competitor in the space scene. Sir Richard Branson's Virgin Galactic, the world's first commercial space line, began test flights last year on craft designed to rocket passengers at 3,000 miles per hour to an altitude of 70 miles. So far, more than 410 people have placed deposits of at least £20,000 each for the flights, which could begin to take off from New Mexico in the next 2 years. Now, the UK government's proposals could clear the way for such flights to take off from RAF Lossiemouth. Meanwhile, space planes could, in the longer term, lift off from any UK airport. Mr. Willetts would not give an exact timetable for changing regulation, but said he hopes we can have the new regime ready in good time.
A room with a view. Prince Harry feeling rather fresh after a night sleeping in a tent in the Arctic. Temperatures dropped to as low as minus 25 overnight, but the third in line to the throne says it was nice to feel the cold. Harry's preparing to join wounded servicemen in their trek to the North Pole. He'll join them for 5 days as they raise money for a forces charity. The team leader says they're all ready for the expedition, even His Royal Highness.
I think we are very well prepared and we're looking forward to getting out on the ice.
Harry plans to spend the rest of the day getting ready to set off. The charity is hoping to raise £2 million.
Does the government work for us or do we work for the government? When times are tough and the government is confronted with the profound conflict of individual freedom versus the power of the state, can it simply ignore the Constitution? Tonight, freedom, the Constitution, and you. When we were colonists of the King of England, our economy was doing quite well. Many of the most successful business entrepreneurs actually came here in order to start businesses free from the regulations and taxes that had been imposed upon them in Great Britain. Soon the King and his ministers realized how well our forefathers were doing here, so they persuaded Parliament to begin to tax the colonists and to regulate them. Many industries here were sending tax dollars there, and eventually the British ministers in England were telling businessmen in the colonies how and with whom to do business.
Well, who's never told? He told a dirty lie, baby. Well, now who's never taught it in Tola? In Tola, dirty lie. Well, well, now who's never taught it in Tola? In Tola, dirty lie. Well, I'm gonna fall a dollar, gonna, he gonna rise and fly. Well, he gonna rise and fly, sugar. He gonna rise and fly, baby. Well, he gonna fall a dollar, on the dollar. He gonna rise and fly. Well, well, the Lord, roll, Lord, he's rolling. Well, the Lord, yeah, Lord, baby. Well, the Lord, roll.
Everyone remembers the battle cry that the pamphleteers and editorial writers of the day used so effectively. Taxation without representation is tyranny. So we fought a revolution. We won the revolution. We wrote a constitution. And in the constitution, the framers wrote safeguards to assure that the new government here could not do to Americans what the British king and the parliament had done to the colonists. British soldiers were authorized to write their own search warrants, for example. So the framers prohibited that in the Fourth Amendment, which states that only judges can issue search warrants, and they may only do so when the government presents evidence to them of a crime. Well, that hasn't worked out because the Patriot Act lets federal agents write their own search warrants. The Constitution protects businesses by prohibiting states from interfering with voluntary contracts between businesses and consumers. Well, that hasn't worked out because the states today tax almost every voluntary exchange we have. In some states, almost a dollar of what you pay for a gallon of gas goes to the government.
Well, rocks and gravel to make a solid road of sugar. And take a rock and gravel to make a solid road. Well, and take a rock and gravel to grab. To make a solid road to sugar. And take a good looking wife and baby. And make a good looking home. Well, and make a good looking Lord and baby. And make a good looking Lord and sugar. And take a good looking wife and mama. And make a good looking home. Well, well, Lord, 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 you're rolling. Well, the Lord, the Lord is sugar. Well, the Lord, the Lord is rolling. Well, the Lord, yeah. Well,
the Fifth Amendment prohibits the government from taking property without paying for it, just as the king and the parliament had done. Well, that too hasn't worked out as planned, because the feds take property from us almost every day. It's called income taxes. I think you get the point of this. The whole purpose of the Constitution was to assure that the government would respect individual liberty, that power would be separated between the states and the federal government, and the government would remain within the confines of the Constitution. Throughout history, the government has openly mocked the Constitution. Lincoln claimed he could violate parts of it in order to preserve other parts. Wilson said that somehow it gave him the power to tell folks how to live. FDR actually wrote laws himself and had them enforced, even though the Constitution only permits Congress to write laws. George W. Bush signed laws into existence and in the act of signing them said he never intended to enforce them. Yesterday, President Obama signed an executive order claiming the right to incarcerate persons in the Guantanamo Bay military prison for the rest of their natural lives, even after acquittal.
But a peg of wood pack it on the schoolhouse door, sugar. Well, a peg of wood pack it on the schoolhouse door. Well, a peg of wood pack it on the
After acquittal, yes, you heard that correctly. Following upon what President Bush proclaimed, President Obama claimed the power to punish people even after a jury has found them not guilty. No Western government has ever claimed the power to do this. Not the King of England, not Hitler, not Stalin, not even the Russian and Chinese communists. Now, I realize that most Americans have little sympathy for those incarcerated at Gitmo. Most assume that because they're there, they must be guilty of something. But that view turns the Constitution on its head. When he was a senator and running for president, Barack Obama knew that and stated that the beauty of the Constitution is that it guarantees fairness to everyone. He was right. But as president, he wants to lock people up forever, even after a jury finds them not guilty. Why should you care about this? Because if the government gets away with it by demonizing these prisoners and making it the popular thing to happen, it might happen to you.
Well, I have been George Bob. Well, I've been told, well, well, I ain't been to Georgia, Georgia, but I've been told, well, well, I ain't been to Georgia, Georgia, but I've been told, mama, well, it's Georgia wind, baby, got a sweet daddy roll, well, he got a sweet daddy roll, mama.
Basically, sovereignty is just autonomy. Autonomy and sovereignty are pretty much one and the same. It's just the fact that whatever it is has the right to govern itself. If you're, a lot of times, you know, tribal nations are considered to be sovereign, and that just means that no matter where they're at, the quote-unquote Indian tribes, it's really hard to say Native American because I find that just as insulting, but the Native tribes that are here, some of them exercise slight sovereignty, which means on their land they have the right to govern that land even though they're within the technical borders of the United States. As an individual, all it basically means is, it's very simple. I mean, if somebody tells you to jump and you believe that you have to jump, you are not a sovereign. If somebody tells you that you jump and you just look at them like, who are you? Right there, you're a sovereign. If you think I need to lift my left arm up and scratch my nose, and your arm automatically responds to that and scratches your nose, that means that you are in control of your body. If you take control over your life and you take the responsibility that comes with that control over your life, right there, basically, you are a sovereign. The deal with the citizen is, citizens are members of a body politic and they owe allegiance to that body politic. And they basically swear that they are not sovereign just by taking the name on citizen. Citizen does not control himself. He has a governing body that controls him, that decides how his money will be spent, decides what he can and can't put into his own body, and many things like that. And if you decide to let an elect group of people make those decisions for you, you're very definitely not sovereign. So really, you are either a sovereign or a citizen, and actually, we're all sovereign, but you get tricked into believing that you're a citizen, and that's the biggest thing that I try to fight against. A lot of us, as we start getting into this, search for knowledge, trying to figure out the tricks of the New World Order, there's so many different rabbit holes to go down, and I've probably been down at least 60-70% of them. You can go down the Federal Reserve rabbit hole, you can go down the vaccination rabbit hole, you can dig forever on Freemasons, you can dig forever on Jesuits, you can dig forever on Zionism, the Black Nobility, you can even find all kinds of stuff on reptiles and all of these just crazy different rabbit holes you go down. And a lot of us are constantly searching for, you know, who is at the top of the New World Order? Who is it that we need to focus our energy on? Who is it that we need to change in order to live freer? And after a while, and I don't know if everybody will come to this conclusion, but after a while, I came to the conclusion that I was looking in the wrong place. I don't need to be looking for who's at the top of the pyramid, and I don't need to be trying to change them. What I need to do is start looking at myself and start trying to change myself. And instead of pointing the finger at the outside world, I needed to take that age-old philosophy of looking at who the other four fingers or three fingers were pointed at, and that was me. And that was really the turning point, and I owe it to a couple of people. Mel, who's in the chat room right now, I want to say shout-outs to Mel. He's one of the main inspirational people in my life that kind of got me on the path that I'm on right now. Also, MarkStevens.net and Tactical Guy One. Those guys have been a tremendous help in helping me understand this legal system. But yeah, basically what it comes down to is when you get sick of trying to find the enemy and you realize that the enemy has been inside of you and it's your insecurities, these people that, no matter what seat of power it is, whether it's the chairman for the Federal Reserve or whether it's the Rothschilds that, you know, oversee the Bank of England, or whether it's the Pope that sits on the throne in Rome, all of these seats of power, it's not those people that are the problem. Because, I mean, you know, you think about revolution and what might happen if we actually did have a revolution and got, you know, rid of this government that we have right now and overthrew all of the leaders that are corrupt and leading us down this terrible path we're going. We've seen time and time again that as long as we create those seats of power, it doesn't matter if we get rid of the leaders. If we still have a society full of followers, we haven't solved the problem. And basically what it comes down to is, where do these seats of power come from? They come from our own insecurities. They come from our own inability to take the responsibility to live as sovereign and autonomous beings. And basically what I wanted to do with my life, and to hopefully be an inspiration for others, is to live my life in a way that doesn't create the necessity for these seats of power, to live my life in a way that doesn't create the necessity for a tyrant to rule over me or my neighbors or anybody else. And rather than trying to put these people out of business by exposing them and yelling at them with a bullhorn and handing out propaganda against them, I think it's much more effective just to change the way we live so that we might create a society that has no need for a pope.
That's the cool breeze of freedom right there.
The Constitution on its face as a legal document is kind of null and void. I mean, people look around and they say, well, that's unconstitutional. Well, the whole thing, that's unconstitutional. They can't do that. It goes against my constitutional rights. I mean, when you look at it in just strictly legal terms, and legal, everything in legal land is fictional anyways, but when you look at it as a legal document, it's void on its face because it's not signed by anybody other than witnesses, unlike the Declaration of Independence, which was signed by people who held themselves accountable to it. And I absolutely love every part of the Declaration of Independence, and the only thing that I really have a qualm is that the idea of the Declaration of Independence was to break off from one government and start another one, and I think that was only half of the solution. The reason that I'm not for the Constitution or the constitutional form of government is because it still comes down to, this piece of paper tells you what your rights are, or these group of people tell you what your rights are. And I don't care how limited they are. Just that idea right there, that idea is the ultimate enemy. That idea is the only thing that we have a chance of overcoming the way that society is now. The only way we have a chance of creating a free society is to get rid of that idea. What we did when we had the Constitution is we said, we don't want a king, a one man who inherits the right from his father to rule over us. We want people who we elect to rule over us. And it's not the problem isn't the king or the people who we elect. The problem is anybody having the right to rule over you. So although the Constitution, I think that if we have to have a government and people are so afraid of their own responsibility that they demand a government, I think that the Constitution that this government was supposedly based off of is a good starting point, but it's still basically blasphemy to me that people in the freedom movement, people that want to be free, think that they need leaders.
It's an absurd insinuation.
Do you like being a participant in the watering can of the flowers of freedom throughout the world?
Congress today reauthorized funding for Facebook, the massive online surveillance program run by the CIA. According to Department of Homeland Security reports, Facebook has replaced almost every other CIA information gathering program since it was launched in 2004.
After years of secretly monitoring the public, we were astounded so many people would willingly publicize where they live, their religious and political views, an alphabetized list of all their friends, personal email addresses, phone numbers, hundreds of photos of themselves, and even status updates about what they were doing moment to moment. It is truly a dream come true for the CIA.
Much of the credit belongs to CIA agent Mark Zuckerberg, who runs the day-to-day Facebook operation for the agency. The decorated agent, codenamed the Overlord, was recently awarded the prestigious Medal of Intelligence Commendation for his work with the Facebook program, which he has called, quote, the single most powerful tool for population control ever created. Among the biggest successes of the Facebook program is Operation Farmville, which the CIA credits with pacifying as many as 85 million people after unemployment rates rose dramatically. Other features, such as the suggested friends window, have been instrumental in allowing government agents to infiltrate deeper into the friend networks of suspected dissidents. For some expert analysis now on the story, let's check in with the Fact Zone's first responders. Jason, you have written extensively about the Facebook program. Why is it so effective?
Well, one of the key reasons is that the CIA has been so thorough in convincing the nation that constantly sharing information about everything that you're doing is somehow desirable instead of deeply unsettling.
Yeah. You know, but critics are saying that with the national debt being so high, is this really the time to be spending even more money on spy programs?
Well, actually, the Facebook program saves the CIA money.
That's right.
Like the Maps application where you list every place that you've been, whether it's at the state or a country or...
Oh, right, with the little pins, they show where you visited. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yes,
I like that.
That kind of information would have taken the CIA months of going through hotel receipts and plane tickets to figure it all out. The manpower that Facebook saves is huge.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the calendar feature even lets the CIA know where you're going to be in advance. So that's
right. So now if they want to pick you up for questioning, all they have to do is see which events you RSVP'd yes to and then send their agents to be waiting for you.
That's how they got my brother.
That's right.
So effective. Mm-hmm. But guys, with all the focus on the Facebook program, is it taking away from some of the other CIA programs like the Twitter initiative?
The funding for that should be cut entirely.
Right, 400 billion tweets and not one useful bit of data was ever transmitted.
Oh, that's true. Now, is this trend of social network information gathering dangerous? I mean, just last week, the New York Times revealed that Al-Qaeda has designed Foursquare to identify popular locations for bombing.
Actually, Brooke, that's been discredited as any kind of real threat. The people that use that site are people that no one would mind seeing bombed anyway.
Yeah. So. Really, the only thing the CIA has to be concerned about is people losing interest in Facebook and moving on to a new social network site, like the Chinese site Wanbi.
I love Wanbi.
Are you guys on Wanbi?
Oh, my God, it's so much more fun than Facebook.
It is great.
I love that one.
I love that you can earn friend points the more state secrets that you post. Mm-hmm. You know, I've got a lot of contacts in the State Department. You know, I think I could really rack them up.
Now, go find the others.com.
Yeah, man, I'll tell you what, that dang old internet, man, you just go on there and point and click, 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 click. It's real easy, man.